This audio is brought to you by Cotant Family Dentistry, the place to go for advanced dental technology and compassionate, patient-centred care. You can trust your smile with an expert team that puts your comfort first. This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, roll call. We're all here but one, and we knew about that, so we're good. Additions or accept the agenda. What is your pleasure, Board? Is the agenda as we said it still good to go?
Yeah, and I'll make a motion to accept the agenda as presented.
Second.
We've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Okay, it's unanimous. Next up, we've got consent agenda.
I'll second it.
We've got a motion and a second to approve consent as presented. Any discussion?
There is. So I have a question, Connie. There you are. I hope you can answer it. So I noticed this last month too. What exactly did we purchase in KC? A desktop monitor replacement. What exactly? Maybe Jacob.
No.
Christy.
A desktop monitor?
Oh, we bought for staff computer replacements.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Is it a big number?
Yeah, so it's 26,000. So it's staff desktops and monitors.
So it's multiple.
So this is staff technology, yeah.
Okay, so I noticed last month there were six people on the that attended. Three of them voted yay and three of them abstained. And I saw that last month too. So I didn't know exactly what that meant, because usually when you abstain, you give a reason for abstaining, but I noticed last month we had the same number that abstained, and so I'm just going to question that.
So if Christy's presenting the information, she abstains. She's a voting member, but she abstains because it's for her. So we try to completely get out the conflict of interest. So if anybody has anything to do with the bid or the quote, they don't vote. So I'll have to look at who else.
I think it's like Charles and Steve, and they were in meetings.
Oh, they weren't there, so they abstained.
They weren't there.
Yeah.
So you write that as an abstain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so thank you guys.
It's not Robert's Rules of Order. We just say they didn't vote.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks.
Other discussion or anything on the consent agenda? Anyone? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the consent agenda as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Okay. Next up, action items, policy revision. This is our DCB, and we've added a definition section to help us follow through.
I'll make a motion, Travis, to approve policy DCB.
Okay. Casey, go. Got a motion and a second. Discussion from the board. Capitalization threshold.
And so as I understand it through the work session, this is basically just a depreciation list, and it tells us what will be on the list with the dollar amount threshold.
I believe that's exactly correct.
It's about that simple.
Yes, it's an accounting tool to track
these
items. Charles, is there anything else you need to say on this?
No.
Okay. Anyone else? Discussion on DCB. All in favor of approving file DCB as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. That's unanimous as well. Okay, principal reports.
our highlight school, Cloud Peak Elementary, is going to...
You ready? Yes, please.
Okay.
Marjorie, did you want to invite Weston? And we'll have our student highlight go first.
Perfect.
Just in case they need to go have dinner.
Go do homework and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So one of our spotlights tonight is a fifth grade student project. It is related to our school improvement goal of students who have met the criteria for proficiency are provided enrichment or extended learning that is highly engaging. And so Weston DeCrew, who is in Mrs. Riddle's fifth grade classroom, did a project recently, an expert project, where he was offered that opportunity for enrichment or extended learning through his GOAT project. So I'm going to let him have the floor. And
yeah. Guys, come in their seats. Be comfortable.
You are welcome to just rock and roll. There we go. All right. So, I've been working on this for a couple, I think 3 or 4 months now, so here we go. So, GOAT means greatest of all time. Many people argue about who's the greatest pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball, but not very many actually use statistics to prove their answer. The sport's been around for almost 150 years, but there have been several good players. But who's actually the greatest? Get the pictures. We have a few pitchers here that we're going to use to decide the greatest of all time. We have Nolan Ryan, Greg Maddux, Randy Johnson, Jake Arrieta, Roger Clemens, Sandy Koufax, Al Leiter, Pedro Martinez, and Phil Negro. Nolan Ryan holds the record for the fastest pitch recorded. It was recorded at 100.9 miles per hour. However, that was recorded in 1973. Whenever you convert that over to the more accurate technology, that number really comes out to 108.1 miles per hour. Greg Maddux is considered the smallest pitcher in history. Randy Johnson is the tallest in history, 6'10". Jake Arrieta, he didn't play very long, but he was very dominant. Roger Clemens holds the record for the most Cy Young awards with 7. Sandy Koufax he's considered the greatest left-handed pitcher in history. Al Leiter, Pedro Martinez, that's all like Jake Arrieta. Phil Negro had a knuckleball, which is made by throwing it like this. It's very difficult to master. But it has less strain on your arm, so your career lasts longer. A lot of people think that. I've decided to use a ranking system to decide the GOAT. Pitcher with the most strikeouts would get a 1, and the pitcher with the lowest score is the greatest of all time. All right, so this is the statistics chart. This is where we get all the information. And on the next slide is the ranking chart, which is just this. So, as you can see, we have our pitchers, we have games, win-loss, ERA, all-star games, strikeouts, walks, no-hitters, innings pitched, completes games, Cy Young Awards, World Series titles, and their fastest pitch recording. So, here's our ranking. Phil Negro had the most games played. Greg Maddux has won the most games. Sandy Koufax had the lowest ERA. Roger Clemens played in the most all-star games. Nolan Ryan had the most strikeouts. Jake Arrieta had the least amount of walks. Nolan Ryan had the most no-hitters. Phil Negro took complete games and Cy Young Awards. Roger Clemens had the... And Sandy Koufax had the World Series titles. And then our velocity goes to Nolan Ryan with our 108.1 miles per hour recorded. So, and the lowest number over there is the pitcher who won. So, So our pitcher who has won the pitcher rating is, it takes a second to load.
Drumroll.
Now, what if we put Nolan into a simulation against one of the best sluggers ever seen in this game? So we're going to use Jim Thome for this demonstration. And you might be wondering, why did I choose Jim Thome? Why didn't I choose Barry Bonds or Babe Ruth? I didn't, because the Bambino was in the dead ball era, as they call, because stats were way higher because the ball was softer. And for some reason, there's just more strikeouts made by batters ever, more than in history. So that also adds on to that fact. And so this is just, Thome hit a 511-foot home run on July 3rd, 1999. Out of all of the home runs that have ever been hit, 329,437. Every one in 54,906 is over 500. So it's very, very rare. And he's, besides Ken Griffey Jr., nobody that has batted left-handed has hit more home runs than him. So here's the simulation here. 202 was Nolan Ryan's average batting average against. That's the average batting average that he faced. Jim Thome's lifetime batting average was 2.276. And every five at-bats, roughly, Ryan's batters would get a hit off of him. So Thome had 8,422 at-bats divided by 612 home runs. So that equals 13.7. So the home runs against Ryan, so every 32 hits, roughly 2 to 3 would be home runs. And they faced each other five times in real. In 1992, they faced each other five times. Thome didn't get any hits off of them. However, he got walked once. But the data says that he would get hits off of them. Now we're going to ask answer the most frequent question asked by baseball fans. Who is the greatest hitter of all time? So you got Jim Thome, Ken Griffey Jr., and Frank Thomas, all from the 1980s, 90s era, which is what we're trying to focus on. There we go. So the ranking chart is actually on the slide this time because we didn't have as many players. So we had Ken Griffey Jr. took the first four categories, games, at-bats, hits, and home runs. Frank Thomas had the highest average with .301. And any batting average over .300 is considered a good batting average. So Frank Thomas had the most. Then Ken Griffey Jr. had doubles and triples. Thome had the most walks. Ken Griffey Jr. had the last three categories. And then, kind of hard to see, but Ken Griffey Jr. didn't tell me had the most seasons. It was tied. So, our batter, this one's a little bit shorter. Ken Griffey Jr. Now we're going to go to the fielders. This one is difficult to answer because there aren't very many statistics that track fielding. There's four that we can use. I think three or four. There's putouts, assists, and so we got Ozzie Smith, Derek Jeter, and Craig Biggio. And so Craig Biggio is in a catcher. He was a catcher for the first season of his career, but then he played infielder the rest of his career. So we had putouts, Golden Gloves, errors, assists, and defensive chances. Defensive chances is errors, assists, and putouts all together. So Ozzie Smith had putouts, Gold Gloves, Derek Jeter had the least amount of errors. Ozzie Smith also had the most assists. Craig Biggio had the most defensive chances. So our fielder this one was kind of a no-brainer because this one was pretty easy. Because Ozzie Smith, he was just a great fielder. All right, final position, catcher. Catcher is the most important position on the field, in my opinion, because he's standing behind home plate. He sees everything, infield, outfield, pitcher. Where are the outfielders positioned? That's what the catcher and pitcher decide. And, well, the coaches decide that, but the catchers help orientate that a little bit. We got Ivan Rodriguez, Gary Carter, and Jorge Posada. So we use the same statistics for the fielders. Ivan Rodriguez had 18 gold gloves. Putouts, we had 14,864 by Ivan Rodriguez. Jorge Posada had the least amount of errors. The assist went to Gary Carter, and defensive chances went to Ivan Rodriguez. So, also kind of a no-brainer, Ivan Rodriguez. So there are arguments all over the nation who's the greatest player. Their opinions could be about the new superstars or like the early 1900s players. Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Corey Seager might top the list at the moment right now. But maybe a new player could come onto the scene this upcoming season like Paul Skeens did this year. And players like Eric Gagne and Justin Verlander might top the early 2000s list. These arguments will probably continue for as long as the MLB exists. Everyone's going to have their own opinion on who's the greatest. What about you? Who do you guys think is the greatest of all time? That's it.
Well done.
Does anyone have any quick
questions
for Weston about his project?
Or?
Do
you like baseball? Yeah. I just want to know if Dr. Miller's working on recruiting here.
Yeah,
good data analysis.
We need a lot of his help,
for sure.
Well, thank you, guys.
Yeah, great project. Yeah.
So then my staff highlight here is with Amy Pearson and Billy Ferris. This spotlight is related to another of our school improvement goals on our school improvement plan. Teachers promote deeper learning and elicit high levels of student engagement through projects, products, and presentations with performance assessments. So these two have been engaged in some professional development recently through the RIDE initiative on performance-based assessments. So I will give you two the floor for this next
week. Well, I just want to start off by saying like that, the irony that he just presented right before us for what we're about to talk about is perfect, because what you just saw was a performance-based assessment, and the amount of data that Mrs. Riddle can glean from that, math, the language arts, the speaking and listening that he just displayed, I mean, that thing was loaded. And so as a teacher, you're looking at bang for your buck, a project like that, you're knocking it out of the park, and the amount of information you just gathered from Weston's incredible. But so it leads into this perfectly. So again, I'm Billy Ferris. This is my colleague, Dr. Amy Pearson. And we're so excited we got the opportunity to start into this RIDE initiative and kind of be guinea pigs, because we're so excited about how it blends with project-based learning, which is a direction that fourth grade has been trying to go for quite a few years. And Amy will talk a little bit more about that. But with this RIDE initiative, with all the different agencies in Wyoming that are really starting to drive this, and now that Johnson County's on board, we're, as teachers, we're really excited about this, and so to be part of it, pretty exciting.
All right, so kind of looking where we started with performance-based assessments, goes back to what Billy was just referring to, and that was project-based learning. And we've been engaged in the work of doing projects with kids for about over 15 years now. This particular project, it's called Bridge Over Troubled Waters, we've been doing for 5 years. And so when we started this journey, here's just a couple highlights as the kids have done the projects through the years. We looked at how we could take what we're already doing and how we can elevate that with these performance level assessments. Just to give you a little bit of background, pick up this book right here. This was the project that we designed, and I'm not going to go through the pages and pages that this project is, but all project-based learning projects start with the driving question. This driving question asks students to be engineers in training, and they were asked to design a bridge that could withhold a certain amount of weight. We had, I'm going to giggle and laugh, because Mrs. Lambert is gracious enough to dress up as the mayor and ask the students to kind of do this project. It hits math standards as well as English language art standards, speaking and listening standards, and visual presentation standards. So that's just a quick overview of the project. So we took that project and we have the students record their experiences through this photo journal. This happens to be, we just grabbed an example of student photo journal that has also been tweaked through all the years that we've done this. And this actually came from some other professional development that we had done with the project-based learning crew that came up here 2 years ago. The students, believe in experiences before labeling. And so the students, we gave them sticks and some glue, and we said, all right, build that bridge. And of course, they failed miserably. And so we had them reflect on that and what they learned from that. And they're not too sad about it. But then we said, well, why did you fail? And they're like, well, we didn't know that. And well, we don't know what makes a bridge strong. And so they started asking questions, and they realized that they had to really engage in some deep learning about bridges before, you know, being asked to do this. And of course, it's not fair that we asked them to do this without teaching them these things first. So we took them on a little field trip around town. We immersed them in their own community and had them start noticing bridges that are around our community, both pedestrian and traffic bridges. And we asked them, while we were on this walking field trip, they all had their clipboards and pencils to see and think and wonder about what they saw. And they recorded that here, as well as took pictures. They started noticing materials that bridges were made out of. They looked underneath bridges to see the structural supports. They started noticing shapes within those real-life bridges. And then we went back to that driving question. And they had to really articulate, well, what do we know? And what do we still need to know? And then they started engaging in some informational literature as well as informational videos. And so we learned about why bridges really fail in real life. And these are actual bridges, Galloping Gertie, I'm sure some of them you've heard of, and why they failed. And then they had to read these nonfiction texts and, of course, articulate what they learned there. Which brings us to the end of phase one of this, is where the performance-based assessment comes in, and that's here. And Billy's going to talk a little bit more about that. But before I turn it over to him, I just wanted to just share with you, when we started this journey, we had these roadblocks that we perceived were there. And actually, some of them are really there, but not how we thought they were. So doing projects and doing performance-based assessment, it takes time. It's super time-intensive, as well as takes a lot of teacher preparation to get it ready for the kids so that they're successful. And then you have these high-stakes assessments that are looming at the end of the year, and you have to get all of these standards taught, and you have to give kids multiple opportunities to get those standards, and it all has to be done within the course of 9 months. And so when you have a project that's original calendar days was roughly 22 days, and now we're adding a performance-based assessment in 3 parts onto that, we were a little panicked about if we could make it happen, if it would be worth our time. So that's just a little caveat before I turn it over to Billy.
Okay, so It's like Weston, you know, you look in the standards, there's no baseball standards. You look in the fourth grade standards, there's no bridge standards, how to build a bridge. But the beauty of it is what Weston did through all of his standards to create that project. It's much like what the students went through. So through this, the math and the English language arts, all the things that are so tangible that a teacher can monitor and check in on were very evident. So to get the students into this, so it's a little background. So in the past, we doing this bridge for like the last 4 or 5 years, one of the things that we noticed happening with some of the students, like if you have teams of two, like those two young ladies, one of them can tend to do all the work and the other one might ride the coattails and be like, yeah, I'm doing this. And, you know, the one's the motivated one and then the other one, and so you start as a teacher, you're like, okay, which one of these, like which one's doing the work and what does this one know or not know? And so that was the beauty of the performance assessment, was it allowed us to individually hone in on each student. And the way we did that was by putting in this interview. And so we had a fictitional, interviewer come in from Cloud Peak News, and they asked the students 5 questions ranging from, why do you think your first bridge failed, and what can you learn from that, and what did you learn on that bridge walk you guys took around town, and when you started researching your nonfiction articles, what kind of information did you gather, and as you move into the future, if you were asked to build a second bridge for the mayor, what would you do different? And so these are the 5 questions it was a video they watched, and it's the interviewer asking them these 5 questions. And this is William, one of our fourth grade kiddos, and this is where he starts constructing his answers to those 5 questions. And all the information in here is coming from that photo journal that they've been building this entire time. So they're set up for success. But what we're looking for is, can William, in the long run, can he write a narrative? And we've already had a dipstick of his narrative writing through personal narratives earlier in the year. Well, now I've done some more teaching and stuff. I want to know, is William growing? So through this performance-based assessment, I get another dipstick. And so he takes all of his information from those 5 questions and he constructs a narrative paragraph for me. I'm looking for his organization. Is his voice coming through the writing? How's his grammar and conventions looking? So it's an obvious look at how William's doing with the standards, and we have a rubric that Amy will get into further. So he creates this. He writes it out, and now we're like, whoa, we could get more out of this. Let's do some speaking and listening like you just saw Weston do, right? So William starts practicing his narrative, and now we're going to film him. So it's kind of like he's responding to the 5 questions that the interviewer asked him, and this is William's video.
I like to talk about first bridge build. For example, I really like the triangle on the top of our bridge. Scientists call it a truss bridge. I also like that the base of our bridge, it was strong and could hold some weight at least. I wish we knew that we needed railings, pillars, and also we had to make it the bridge long enough. And we had a budget to build our bridge. I wish we would have known to use lots of what real engineers call cement, but we used glue instead. And last, I wish we knew how much supplies we'd get. I learned that when a professional engineer builds a bridge, he or she needs to have these things. Cement, pillars, railings, triangles to make it a truss bridge, and support. Also, the bridges are long. And also, they are big and strong. We need to make it long enough so it can fit in between 2 tables. Also, we need lots of suspension. And last, we need lots of popsicle sticks to make it strong enough. I would change our first bridge build by using more popsicle sticks and by using more glue and to use more pillars on the bridge. Also, we need beams, arches, and trusses. And last, we want it to be able to hold weight.
So that was a good observation of William doing something separate from his partner. His partner can't access his interview, his script he built. So they're completely separate, so you get a clear vision of what each kiddo is up to and how things are progressing. So we're getting excited. The kids, like you can hear a pin drop in the rooms when they're working on this performance assessment. They have no idea we're assessing them. They're excited. And this is not a staged photo. These kids are in it. I mean, I was just looking around. I was like, I got to tell Amy. This is awesome. I went down. She's experiencing the same thing. So we're like, this is awesome. So we thought, well, what are the kids thinking of this? So we put together a little video, and we just got some feedback from some of our students.
about this type of work versus the assessments that you're used to at school?
Stressful. And
why stressful? Why is it less stressful?
Because it's more organized than the laptop.
And what do you like about this bridge assessment the most?
Probably researching.
The research side of it. Does it even feel like you're taking an assessment right now? So, William, what do you like about this type of assessment versus the kind you're used to?
I like that we get to build a bridge at the first part of it, and I also like the research that we get to do.
Thanks, William.
Yeah.
What do you like about this type of assessment that you're working on versus what you're usually doing?
I like that, like, you can research stuff and you get to, like, work more by yourself and with other classmates.
So you get to work with a classmate on something, right? Mm-hmm. And the part you're working on right now, is it all on your own?
Yeah.
What parts have you been given that actually help make it easier for you? The grading rubric. What part of the grading rubric was really helpful for you?
That it told you how many sentences you need.
Sentences and the examples. Did those help you?
Yeah.
Thanks, Tegan. So, Henry, with this performance assessment, you mentioned that you kind of like it. What is it about this type of assessment that you like versus what you're used to at school?
I like that we get to do a project with it. It makes it more enjoyable instead of going through the writing process.
Does it feel like you're actually taking an assessment as you're working on it right now?
Not at all.
Why not?
It's fun because we get to build a bridge with it.
Build a bridge with it. So you don't even know you're taking a test.
Yep.
Thanks, Henry. So, Ayla, you're working on a performance assessment right now that has to do with narrative writing. What do you like about this style that you're doing in class with the bridge project versus the kind you're used to in school?
I like the personal narrative, but I also like this one because it's more fun and we get to do different projects.
Landon, so what do you like about this type of assessment that you're working on for your bridge project?
I like it because it doesn't feel like I'm being tested. It feels like it's for fun.
Why does it feel fun?
Because, like, you actually get to make something when you're doing it.
You build the project along with the assessment, you kind of like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Landon. Mm-hmm.
None of that was staged, even about the white top. But Amy's going to talk more about it. One of the students was talking a little bit about the rubric, and we learned a lot from that. So, Amy,
So Billy and I have been teaching for 20 years, and so we thought that we were really good at writing rubrics. And so we whipped one out that, you know, really, really honed into our standards that we were trying to reach, and, you know, here is our first attempt, and we had our ideas and organization and voice and speaking and listening, and it goes on to page 2. And so, you know, we cranked this out, and we're like, yeah, we're feeling really good. And through the Write Initiative, they have you go through several different protocols to really get feedback from peers, and or, in this case, from ChatGPT. So we used AI to get feedback, and we were really, really skeptical when we first put our rubric to the test into ChatGPT. We're like, there's no way it's gonna give us anything that we could possibly use. And oh my gosh, did it ever. And this is just a picture. I know you can't read it because it's so little. But it told us what our strengths was per criteria. And then areas of growth. And one of the areas that it said that we needed was student exemplars. It's like, well, duh. But we're like, yeah, students need to know, what does a 1 look like? Well, what does a 2 paragraph look like? What's a 3 paragraph look like? And so we went through and, let's skip down here, we made exemplars that we shared with the kids, and we had the students kind of grade these exemplars, and it does 2 things. One, it really aligns the students to what you're asking, gives them examples of what you're looking for, and even though some people are afraid that students will copy these, they don't. They're so immersed in what they're doing that they don't copy these, but it really gives them a really good idea. But then it also helped Billy and I really hone in on what we're expecting from students and well, what does a 3 look like and how is that meeting our rubric? So that was the first thing we did. And then we gave it to the students, and the things that they were producing, they just weren't getting to the heart of it. And we're like, oh my gosh, what is happening? And it can't come to find out that really cool rubric that we made. They didn't understand it because it was in our language and it wasn't in their language. And so we rewrote the rubric again. And that's the second one here, the kids simplified it. And we used those exemplars as kind of anchors and came up with four questions that they had to ask themselves that really got to that proficiency. And it was way better than our rubric.
That's right, really.
Yeah. And so kind of going back to those original fears that we had when we started, this performance-based assessment and these projects and the time that they take, and this standards march to get through the year to make sure your kids have everything that they need. It actually wasn't quite the march that we thought it was. When you give your kids and allow this time and space to do these types of projects, the learning is so much deeper, and it sticks with the kiddos. So you don't have to, you know, give those multiple opportunities to do that assessment over and over again to make sure they got it before you move on. And it's time very, very, very well spent.
Okay, so with our project moving forward, we've now, you know, it's phase one is completed, ended with the performance assessment. So now we're looking at going into phase two and phase three. We're excited about phase two. We're looking at dipping into some more of our math standards with the performance assessment. And in phase three, maybe some different and more language arts with phase three of that. So that project will continue until we have the ultimate winner of who built the strongest bridge for the town of Buffalo. And then, so as far as our practice moving forward, Amy and I are excited that we have our other fourth grade partner, Mrs. Callen, is joining cohort two for the Right Initiative. And now it sounds like we have a third and a fifth grade teacher from Cloud Peak joining the Right Initiative for cohort two. And so our building's really starting to take off, and now, you know, when you get Metal Arc involved in this and get the middle school going in this, and that cohort one, the one we're in, it's just a taste.
Yeah, and we have our school, BHS, KC.
Yes, BHS and KC are in
there,
yeah.
But looking for more for cohort two.
So two revolutions people, they're, you know, every time we go to these trainings, they're like, what you need to be thinking, how are you going to push this forward, what's it going to look like as you take it to your staff? So now we're getting teammates involved in the power of numbers, and so we're going to take it to our third and fifth grade K-5 teachers on the 20th and present this, and just trying to get the ball rolling on this, and then take it to the district and just get this thing fired up. So we're really excited about that.
That was a lot.
Is this the only performance-based learning that is in your school, or are there other, like, a different assignment, not just a bridge, but there's a different assignment, or is this just like a whole year project?
So our case, the bridge project was always there as the project-based learning, but we just weren't ever sure if we were assessing individual students and their skills, which is why we are tweaking it and adding these performance-based assessments for individual kiddos.
Sure.
As far as other projects, I know that you know, our school's riddled with amazing projects that are happening. As far as elevating it to this, you know, using the different protocols that they have you go through to kind of make sure it's a true performance-based assessment, I don't know.
If they are, maybe they are, but we don't know that they are, because not everyone has been trained to know how to do this type of work. And once we do, then it's like, oh, okay, we've already got this in place. All we gotta do is take a tweak here and a turn here, and pretty soon we're gonna have what could be defined as that performance-based assessment.
Well,
does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's amazing. The more you can do that, kids think they're actually having fun at school. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And you brought something that was real to them, a bridge. You got They went out and looked at them. You walked around town.
Yeah.
I think that is so awesome. It's things that they use every day. They walk over bridges. They drive to them, come to school. And so kudos to you guys. I thought that was awesome.
We have more parents that say, every new town we go to, look at that bridge. Yeah. And they start talking about the bridges.
So wouldn't it be cool to be able to take them to the Golden Gate Bridge or something?
Oh, my gosh. Field trip?
There you go. No problem.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys. All right, gangs. Anybody got questions for any of the principals this week? Principal reports.
Mr. Chair,
please.
So I did have a question about the ride, and you guys answered it, because Jake also said in his principal report that you thought that there was like six, did you say six within your school?
We have six currently in the district.
Yeah.
So Dr. Miller and I have been working on it, and
okay.
We got six in the district from three different schools, and we're enticing others.
Okay, so answer me this, and just to make sure I'm understanding, Mrs. Lambert. So the ride initiative, so like the PLC walks that we do in the school, right? And so they know, the teachers know the performance or the standards that they have to meet wherever they lie. So then they go in and they this is the extra that they see what the ride is doing, and they collaboratively put them together for them to be able to work within their PLC.
Is that what I'm seeing, where you're trying to head?
I guess I wouldn't say, like, what's the drawback, but why don't we have more teachers doing that?
I think just exactly the roadblocks that Amy talked about, like, this takes a lot of time. Where does this fit within the way that I know my students will be assessed at the end of the year? That assessment doesn't look like this assessment. So am I robbing my students of an opportunity to do well on this assessment by spending my time with this type of an assessment? And just that can be really scary when you know that there's accountability tied to how students do on those tests at the end of the year. If you feel ill-equipped to design a performance-based assessment, you might not jump on board to do that. And so I think that's why this training is so important, because then if we can have a ripple effect and have a third, a fourth, and a fifth grader teacher all gaining the knowledge and the skills and the expertise for how to design these, then they can help their team, and then that whole team feels confident in moving this direction, so that some of those PLC conversations about data and results could be tied to something like a performance-based assessment instead of a traditional assessment. Does that answer that?
Yeah, it does. I got to sit in a little bit of a PLC walkthrough at Mr. Glassick's school, and I wish I could have stayed longer, just because it kind of like things started connecting, and I mean, anything we can do to help teachers to get it out there so that maybe they don't feel like, this is what I have to make sure my kids know, and be stressful for them, because stressful for them, stressful for kids, mm-hmm. I mean, just equals,
So to go slow to go fast is basically the approach here. So to go slow to go fast, we're going to get it right, we're going to get it good with several of our teachers, and teachers that are experts in their area, and then, like Maggie said here, it's a ripple effect of it naturally taking shape in other PLCs.
And I think it goes also to what Marcia asked, which is, are these types of things going on in more than just this project? I think that there are a lot of things going on that are ripe with opportunity for more of this. It's just about, just like they experienced, Amy and Billy and Camden experienced with this bridge project, it was like, We know what we have is good. We just have to tweak a couple things to make it that much better. And I know that those are things that are going on in every grade level. It's just like, okay, now how do we elevate it with this type of an assessment piece?
I like that too, what you said, Jake, about the expert teachers, because I think it was Gib a while ago. He had it in his in your school improvement plan of giving your teachers the opportunity to go and sit and listen to expert teachers.
Absolutely.
And that, I mean, this is all making sense to me now. Like, it's just like coming together really well. So that's exciting to me. Good job.
Anybody else? Anything for the principals, please?
I got a question for Mr. Glasic.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
What are we doing, if anything, to form a bond with the high school on the middle school FFA?
Well, we've had some preliminary meetings. We were offering some ag electives, mm-hmm. and we're waiting on some guidance from our FFA advisor at the high school. The plan that's been that they're formulating, and then if need be, the high school advisor would come to us and say, "This is what we would like to see for the middle school to come in, and how we can get more involved to support the high school program." So based on this past fall, based on some preliminary meetings, see what the high school would need, and then we would support from there.
All right. Thank you.
Marcia, you had to.
For you again, Mr. Lassick. Okay. So, one, I love that you are doing the Anxious Generation book study. And yes, I keep preaching it. Please read it, people. So good. I don't know what chapter you're on right now. Have you just started this?
Well, we started it before Christmas, and then we've met twice, so we're in that last part of the book where, again, how does it all look in the end?
Yeah,
some of the solutions.
Right. I was going to say chapter 11, which talks about how to implement things in school. I really hope that everyone would read that or just like get involved in that somehow. I mean, there's just like, they keep it very simple on just a few things that are already in our schools that we can do. And we all know these cell phones, this smart world, it's not great for our children. It's not great for us, period. So I thank you for doing that book study. I hope it gets more people get to do it.
And we're growing from it because there's some programs coming up here very quickly. Our counseling department's come together. We're doing some screenagers.
I saw that. Yeah. Thank you. That was so cool. I think that's great.
Led by our counselors, so there's more to come.
Yeah, good.
It's spreading to the community now.
That's the thing. I think one of the biggest things in there was talking about is speak up. We need the community to hear it. We all need to be on board because they are our kids. We want what's best for them, and it's going to be hard, but we can do this.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Other questions for the principals? I got just sort of a pop quiz. Jake, you mentioned in your Did You Know there should be data from WDE coming for post-secondary readiness?
Yep.
What are they evaluating? What are the things that you're checking there?
Post-secondary readiness scores, so our graduates from 2024, as they leave, we go through the process of putting on their transcripts, whether or not they were Hathaway, what level of Hathaway they achieved. Data is collected from our CTE courses, all over industry recognized credentials, and that's reported to the state as well, so that data has been collected. And so all of that's put together into a report saying, are your kids ready, post-secondary readiness, and that's off of your ASVAB, off of those CTE tests, or off of your Hathaway score.
All of them together.
So all that data comes to our high schools towards the end of this month, and that at which we look at and say, is this correct or not correct? And you find errors in those. And it's very important for us to look through those, find those errors. We submit the errors, what we find, and it gives us we get an accurate score come next fall on our school accountability. So it's a process of being able to review the data that WDE is going to use to score us on the accountability report. So we have that coming. That's for post-secondary readiness. We have out right now, I believe, the credits earned for ninth grade to review.
Oh.
So that's being reviewed right now.
Well, thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome.
I have a question, Jim.
Please.
Gib, the advisory changes for the semester, these are the exciting pieces, at least,
yeah.
I think. I know it's early, but how, like, do we have a lot of students taking advantage of that?
Okay, so the first 3 weeks of the semester, we rolled right back into our reading period.
Right.
So our survey, lottery survey, will go out to students on Wednesday. So Wednesday,
okay.
We will see have the first glimpse of what students are choosing.
Gotcha. I'm excited to hear. So then if they don't choose it, they still can utilize the advisory period the same way as...
Yeah, so there's two sort of base choices, if you will. One is to remain in the reading. We have a lot of kids who just enjoy that. The second sort of base choice will be a study hall.
Gotcha.
And so kids will pick one of those two as sort of their baseline for just a three-week session. 3 weeks later, they'll re-choose.
Pick again. Gotcha.
And then in this first session, we're offering custom fishing nets with Ryan Rivera. So kids have an opportunity to get the shop and build a custom fishing net. Ms. Sweckert is going to offer an AI and virtual reality, these mini tech bites in that class. And then we are going to offer, Ms. Kremers is going to offer cribbage. So, you know, we have 12 kids that can get into the fishing nets. We have 16 kids that can play cribbage. I think 18 kids that can get into the tech world. And we'll just see. We'll see what kids want to do. And one of the interesting things, I think, as we roll this out for a number of weeks is actually to learn what kids are really interested in, right?
Yeah.
Just using Mr. Rivera as an example, you know, part of the goal here is that we're going to get kids who didn't get Woods in their schedule to go try Woods, right, with something that's pretty straightforward, although super unique, building your own, bending the wood and gluing it up and finishing it. So he has an opportunity then to have some students maybe try Woods next year because of a 3 week session where they're not risking a whole lot. It's not a semester. So we'll see we'll see how it rolls out.
All right, gang. Next up, district's opt-in reports. Questions or thoughts on the opt-in reports?
Well, I would, John. A couple different questions. One of them is that Clear Creek Middle School, you put in what you call a JACE, which is the Java Application Control Engine, and that sounds like something that runs a coffee pot, but I'm pretty sure it isn't.
Computer program.
Right. It runs HVAC. It's a building automation system.
Okay. Second one is you guys got a new... four-wheeler. Did that? You must have bought some attachments with it.
Yeah, we bought a plow and some heated hand grips.
Yeah.
On it.
So you no doubt plow snow. What school does that?
We had Clear Creek Middle School.
Okay.
One that was there that burned up. I mean, it's
so. What do you do with the old one?
That's a good question. There's some strings tied to that because it has a title. We talked about donating it to see if VHS shop wanted it. Started asking some questions. Well, it has a VIN number. It has a title. If we sign it over to the shop, it's still the district's
property.
So if a kid takes it, does a project, takes it off to his ranch, takes it home, it's a project, scooter or something, wrecks it, that VIN number still tied to Johns County School District. So we are stripping what parts we can have. We still have in a same four-wheeler down in KC, and this four-wheeler that is done, we'll take the winch off it, we'll take the tires off it, any parts that we could use on the other four-wheeler, and we'll just store them and then take it out to Mr. Arsh, dispose of it.
Thanks, Sean.
And one thing I didn't put in my report, and I added something today that the technology department and myself are working on getting pricing and starting to build for Bell and Intercom system. for Buffalo High School and Cloud Peak. They're the last two schools in the district to have their systems upgraded. We know that Buffalo High School started 3 years ago without bells intercoms. So it's kind of priority and want to do it while the state's going to allow us. Another thing they didn't put in there, Mr. Ostheimer is working with Sheridan College and bringing a CDL, Certified Driver's License Program. We're going to house one of their simulator trailers at Buffalo High School, so we're putting in the power requirements for that trailer to be housed at Buffalo High School so they don't have to trailer back and forth and it's available to our students.
So that's a great lead to a question for me then, and I'm glad you guys are doing that. So will you go to Sheridan College to do the CDL, or you'll have it here?
No, you're there at high school.
So is somebody going to, like before we had Rocky Mountain Equipment had let us use a semi to drive? Do we have?
They have a truck.
So Sheridan College has a truck.
Oh, perfect.
So they'll have to do the driving in Sheridan.
So part of that. Part of, remember when you asked that several years ago, Sheridan College has bought two simulators
yes.
now. So the one simulator is what they'll put up at BHS. We'll put a power cord in, but part of whatever that grant is, they also bought a truck. So I think, yeah, they will have to go to Sheridan College to do the actual driving, but the simulators will be a BHS, and we'll plug it in up there. So that's.
I think cool. that'll be a great addition to the high school.
And if you guys get an opportunity, I would invite you when it's there and they're using it.
So
to stop by and see it. I went to the parent meeting for the students that were interested in it, and they let the kids get in there, buckle up. It's real life. Mm-hmm. That guy back there running a computer, you start out dry, you go to rain, snow, to deer, to, I mean, the whole thing shakes. I mean, it's a very nice setup.
Very interesting. It's great for the kids. Can we use this as a recruiting tool for transportation? If this thing's real fun, maybe we get somebody to drive.
We've already thought about that, okay. So we're thinking about what that could mean for the training piece. But if you see the members of the Sheridan College Board or any of those, I would say thanks to it because that, you know, we planted that seed a couple years ago, and they were able to find the money to do it. And this is kind of this is where we're at. So Dr. Trevor and I had that conversation 2 years ago, and he made it come to. To reality, so that's a huge win right here. So
yeah, and I've spoke to the what's his name again, Jason Bennett. I'm sorry. Anyways, the head guy, the instructor, because we in the maintenance and grounds part we have a semi, but we don't have a CDL holder. Mm-hmm. I talked to him about possibly getting one of or two of our people enrolled in the class at the same time as the students, and they were very open to. I just have to talk very nicely to Miss Gay over here and figure out how we can
get that ironed out.
Make that work.
Yeah.
But it's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
So, John, once they get done with this class, okay, they won't they'll have a CDL license and they won't have to pay the, what is it, $4,000 or $8,000 for the training?
The students will not.
Yeah, students will not. Yeah, that's great.
Oh, and then the students are...
Well, they can't come out with a license because don't you have to be 18 to have a CDL?
So we only have one student yep. who is not currently 18 but will be.
Yes.
So they will all finish with...
Yeah, and the only thing the kids are responsible for in the meeting I went to is the physical, yeah. just some minor things. I mean, like $200 if that for the... Because my son's actually doing the class. But they were telling us, I mean, they were great with the kids. I mean, they laid it down the line, told them how choices being 18 years old could affect their future with that CDL. You know, and talk to them about Lincoln Transport out of Alaska. They're hiring 18-year-old kids to go out there to work, and they're doing the tankers, the duals, hazmat. Up there in Alaska, paying them $42 an hour to start. They put them in a shipyard, they learn to run a 60-ton forklift until they give them a bait, and then they send them on the road. By the time they do that, they've already got three pay increases.
Sure. Boy, that is a heck of an opportunity. That's awesome.
Is there an age requirement? Like, is it only offered to seniors then?
Yeah. I think they said 50,000 drivers short in the U.S.
Yeah. A lot of people in seats quickly.
California's not
allowed
somewhere
anymore.
Mr.
Charles.
Please.
Jake, do you have any seniors that would be able to take advantage of this?
We'd have to get creative with the schedule and get them up here in the release period. But Coming up, yes.
Cool. Well, you're a creative guy. You can figure that out. Yeah.
And you had some last year do it, right?
Yep, I had some last year do it, too.
Oh, good.
What about New West?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, our senior schedule is more or less set, you know, for this last semester. But, yeah, I mean, that's something that they'd definitely be interested in the future.
Sure, an opportunity they could consider at least.
Absolutely.
Yep. Anything else for the ops team?
I have a question. More of like an idea, I guess, Bill, this is for you, reading your report on going traveling to these games and how stressful that can be. That's early that these kids are leaving, and it's long roads, and parents hate driving that far. Is there any way, and I know maybe you would know, maybe this is more of a Ryan question, like, you know, when we had fires in Sheridan, there were football games played where you compromised and came to a different town. Does that work in Wyoming ever to, like, say, hey, you're from that end, you're from here, let's meet in Casper?
Well, that is definitely a Ryan question, because that's the scheduling from the activity side. I can tell you that Ryan and I sat down this afternoon, and we had a nice meeting, and we were coming up with some of those creative ideas, how we can bridge that gap with those early travel times and things like that. A good example would be our speech and debate team Friday went to Gillette, then traveled back home. They were arrived back home 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. Next morning they were to load up at 6 a.m. and go back to Gillette to finish their next day. At 6 a.m. that morning, many of you might have been having coffee and saw that the weather was just not ideal. We had some extreme blowover risks, we had some things like that. I ended up pulling that trip for safety concerns. I said, we're not going to be able to go now. It did lighten up that day, and they could have traveled. Again, with the return time that evening, I looked at it again, and we came back in with another extreme. So it was a good call, I think, for the most part, that we stayed home with our team that day. But the other teams that had some budget dollars and weren't as close got to participate because they were hoteled up for the night. They weren't traveling back and forth. So that, you know, that question comes to mind, okay, what can we do there as well? Ryan and I had some great ideas. There's a lot of factors that come into the scheduling. One of it is the officials, you know, getting those officials at those venues, getting the scoreboard keepers, even the, you know, the, all that. The venues that there's other things that are going on, you know. Our middle school uses our high school from time to time, so sometimes they're overbooked. There's so many activities and so many things going on. Yeah, it would be great if we all just decided to stop in Casper on the weekend and play our games and come home and everybody travel to a central location, but unfortunately that's Wyoming. And we've been doing it for years. We've been going all over the state, and we do it successfully. We are really fragile right now with our human resources. Dave, you talked about 50,000 drivers in the United States. I'm not sure what the number is with school bus drivers, but it's even more. So our crew is strong. They're doing a great job. As you saw in my report, I think my highlight that I wanted you guys to see out of that was there's going to come a day when we're not going to be able to do it all, and we're going to have to prioritize which trips get to go. So the community, the parents, the kiddos that are left behind that don't get to go, they need to understand that it's not because of a certain choice or a dislike for a certain, you know, activity or a venue. It's all going to come based on to when was this put in? Is this a culminating event? Will this affect further activity down the road and things like that? And that decision will be made, you know, by a group of us, and not lightly either. Knock on wood, we've been able to be successful and rescue it and move through it. But this coming weekend, we have every bus available in the Johns County School District. We'll be on the road with every available driver. Okay? And that's our light weekend. February 1st, we're doing some pretty amazing things. We're bringing in some substitutes. We're having some teams get in with each other. We've already talked with different venues to get some things to happen, if we can see that as we move down the road. So that's going to be our ace in the hole, is just that, what you're talking about, Marcia, that ability to communicate, collaborate, say, hey, can we both be here? Can we do this? you know, will your B team come and with you, and we can do it all at the same time, some of that. Instead of two buses, we'll get in one. So there are possibilities with it, but that's a great question for Ryan.
Yeah, I hope we can, as a state, maybe even just be a little more imaginative and creative about activities, schedules, and yeah. It's hard. I'm glad that's not my job. Like, I wouldn't like it, but...
One of our drivers went.
I'll speak to that real quick. It is complicated. You start having central locations. You take away home field advantage or homecoming. It's kind of like when you try to schedule a tournament at somebody else's place. You have to go almost be 2 years in advance because most of those people have home events happening on the same night on a Friday night. And then it's the number of referees. And then if you have to pay referees to travel from across the state, so. It does get very complicated in what that looks like, but yeah, I think even the university moving the state championships in football to one location after 3 years, everybody's okay with it now. But right out of the chute is those towns lost that hometown advantage of, you know, the top seed getting to host a state championship game and taking some of those away. So it will take some time and we'll take some collaboration of what that looks like. So, but just to reassure you, Marcia, topic has come up before.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, it has.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Bill, if I can, I saw you have a student that comes in and doing a little mechanic work and whatnot. Is that something that's advertised there and you have more than just one student interested?
I think we have another student that is going to be interested through the special needs department. They were looking into how they can make that work. That was just a flat phone call that I got from Michelle Dahlberg. Right before Christmas, she says, "Hey, I've got a young man that was really interested in becoming a mechanic.
Good, we
want to keep him focused, keep him going. Would you guys be able to, you know, mentor him for one class period? You know, it's a short class period, so we got about 40 minutes with this young man. But we, you know, my team took that on. They just thought that was great because, you know, two of my mechanics they only have high school diplomas, but they have 30 years of experience as mechanics." So they were like, yeah, we really want to take this kid and help him out. So we've been doing some different things with him, and it's been awesome for him. I wish we could have him longer, you know, so that he get more done. But it's more than just pushing the broom around. Those guys are doing some, you know, light body work with him the other day. We had him mounting some tires, some different things like that. So it's been a neat chance.
We talk about a shortage of drivers and stuff, shortage of mechanics also.
Yep.
Well, thanks for doing that.
Yeah, great creativity. That's really neat. Anybody else? Ops team? All right. District admin. Mr. Super, you want to kick it off?
Sure. So first thing is my apologies. I think you guys seen that letter the counselors are doing. That movie night, yep, in relation to the book that you're talking about, so super excited about that as we kind of move forward. For me, there's a lot of stuff in the report, but I think the key focus I want to talk about is the PowerSchool breach, just kind of give everybody an update with where we're at with that. So this was nationwide in Canada, as we kind of explained before. We're still doing updates. Strongly encourage everybody to go to our website where we'll post all that information. I think we're very fortunate in Johnson County, maybe in the state of Wyoming. There were school districts over 90,000 social security numbers went out into the web. That is not Johnson County School District number one. So as we kind of process through that, PowerSchool, Richard James was on site. We segregated some of that stuff. Our data goes back to when we first started, which was 2000. And kind of just continuing to work with PowerSchool in the state of what that looks like. But again, they're not in the system. We're kind of trying to figure out where we're at. We do know the data piece, and if there are critical pieces of information about any individual, we'll contact them individually because I think it's pretty minimal for us in Johnson County. Okay? So, yeah, that consumed most of the tail end of last week. So
yeah.
And I see, Christy, there's another meeting when? Tomorrow? Yes. Mm-hmm. So there's another meeting with some very high-level people tomorrow. Okay?
Other things from the board? Questions?
So Mr. Chairman. Connie, if I could. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really understand, and so I'm going to have you help me with it. On the food service, so you have an all funds total budget, and you budgeted for food service there $875,000, but then towards the bottom there you have where you transferred money, and you have a budget of $250,000 mm-hmm. for food service. So explain the difference to me.
Well, $875,000 is the total budget, but
got
we
it.
Don't have enough cash to correct. Cover the $875,000, so that's where the transfers are coming in. So
you've transferred $250,000 into the food service account from the beginning of the school year, is that what you're saying?
Yes, and we'll have it. We'll talk about that in February's work session about what that looks like and what it's going to. My estimate was a little off, so we're already at $250,000, and that's what we budgeted for the year. So, but we'll talk about that in February. But yeah.
When so, you say budgeted, that was transfer budget. Was
transfer budget, yes.
Okay, got it. All right. Ricky, is that higher than normal, what we've had to transfer into there? It is, from what I've noticed in the past years.
Yes, it is.
And the reason for that is?
Well, we don't have COVID funds, so we had a lot of yeah. grants
and
coming
yeah,
in.
We were given, not yes. giving, but then, providing free mm-hmm. lunches and breakfast.
And then we increased salaries. And did not increase lunch prices very much. So, yeah.
Ripple effect.
Food and supplies. I don't have a say
your
in
food
the
costs.
Price.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cost of paying
everything.
Yeah.
Wherever you're at.
Thank you, guys.
So, I guess, I'll just, so Dave, that's a great question. I think we're going to talk about it more in February, but that is one of the inflation pieces that we need to talk about. So, you know, we budgeted, then we have to continue to add because food service is not reimbursed through the state model at all. So it's just a cost of doing business, and that's something that we are looking at as a district level, but Ricky's doing everything she can. You know, we can't, if a hot dog costs this much, that's what we have to pay.
The price is the price.
The price is the price, and, you know, just being realistic with stakeholders that the cost of lunches are going to go up, just as the cost of a burger at McDonald's is now.
Yes,
you know, there's no such thing as a 99-cent burger anymore. So,
having said that, though, I did read a report the other day that food is actually going down in price. When I read about inflation, it says it's actually going down, which surprised me.
Oh, yeah, but it's got a long way to go.
Yeah.
What's that? I said it's got a long way to go to get back to where it was, even though it's lowering. But another thing is that we also offer, we increase some benefits on that side as well, because it's really hard to get somebody to come and work part-time, and you're just right there, but you don't get any benefits. So that's another thing that we just try and keep her staff. And they do a good job for us, and we want to do it.
So, Charles, that's a great question. What you brought up is, how come food isn't reimbursable? Where kids need to eat.
It's a great question. Every recalibration that I've went to, I've asked why it's not in the model. You know, there's some federal funding that we give reimbursement for, but again, that's based on whether families complete the correct forms to get some of that government reimbursement. But if there is one thing that should be put into the model to really help with funding, is that at least reimbursement for wages for food service so that we're not always in a hole. So. That's a question that's been asked ever since I've been in this position, and that will be a question I'm sure that will be brought up again in recalibration this summer, is why isn't the state helping support that? Because we know kids and at-risk families, that's a critical part of the school, but yet there's no funding for that.
Are we still doing the backpack program on the weekends?
It's not part of my program, but Friends Feeding Friends.
Friends
Feeding
Friends. Dr. Hansen and their group does some work with that stuff, too.
Kids that come deliver the bags every Thursday. And then the
more or less
middle
kids.
School and high schools have pantries, mm-hmm. too.
Are we doing more or less, or?
What's the backpack program?
It's a program to supply at-risk families and stuff some food for the weekend.
School's running session?
Yeah, or just over the weekends.
Okay. All right.
That's also part of the what the parent liaison does, is connecting families of need with different resources in the community.
That's great.
Anything else for the admin team?
Mr. Chair.
Please.
Dr. Miller, I just had a couple of couple of questions. I know. I'm starting to kind of like it. It's kind of exciting. So the calendar committee, that came out, and I see that the deadline is set for the end of this month, right? That's when you want all surveys complete that you have sent out across the board. Because we had a question about that, where that came, where did that come from? And that's a lot of work. I mean, 3 years, and just factoring in all of the things, it's just a lot. So
we had a great committee, and then Mr. Mater, and then just principals and our teachers. We had a new committee, and they were gung-ho about it and had a lot of great insight. We had some classified as well. So it was a great committee that they just rolled up their sleeves and got some great work done.
Kudos to you guys. So Dave, for your question that you had, so January 31st. Okay, so then my other question for you is, could you give, for the curricular resource identification, is that just like how everything's on a schedule? So science is on a schedule, math is on a schedule. Is this just, is the physical health, fine arts, and performing arts, is it just that time for their schedule to come up?
Yes.
Because I was, you know, we were looking, I think it was in Gibbs report, yeah, and in Charles too, the PE credits. And so I'm assuming.
So the credits and the resources are totally separate. We planned this out our first year here, just let's give everybody a chance and a cycle to get the resources they need to help their students be proficient. Usually that rolls out when, you know, you have your standards realignment and you get another year to readjust your curriculum maps. That hasn't happened because of COVID and other things.
Okay.
Plus with the ESSER funds and even Y-Built funds, we were able to do Reading Horizons a little bit early. So our cycles are sort of off a little bit, but at least this year we're able to fund those resources for PE, fine, and performing arts. And with the writing curriculum, that's another piece of that Y-Built that, okay, let's go ahead and get that taken care of as well.
Great.
Can I ask one more question about the calendar committee? Why are we starting the 18th of August? We have to? I mean, that seems so early. I was just a little shocked when I got that survey. Angry mom mode. What?
Well, one of the feelings, getting feedback from our principals and the teachers on the committee, that once we have to have the 185 days total, 10 of those are PD days, but 175 instructional days, one of the biggest concerns is having school pass Memorial Day. Students tend to check out. Teachers are wanting to check out as well. So every year is a little bit different because of either Christmas break. This year was just one of those years that we're able to have 16 or 17 days, depending on if you're a student or staff. But other years, it's a lot harder to figure that out. Plus, we have high impact days now. So we're trying to figure it out with each year as it goes, and it just happened to be an earlier start for that one.
Well, that is a bummer.
And so just something that we're thinking about, but also WASHA rotates. So when you have high school activities that start on a certain day and most kids are back in school, so that calendar rotates back. So there's an early start and then it progresses a little bit. So you got, you know, you have state culminating event after your after the World's Fair. Everybody goes to Casper. So you have that, but you also have a majority of high school activities that start on a certain day too. So kids are back and people are back in the community, so all those factors kind of get determined into what that looks like. However, I will also let you know that there's a lot of work that was done by this committee, but there is a potential bill that would require us to go back and revisit some of this too. So anyway, we'll keep our eyes on that.
And doesn't that bill say that school will be from Memorial Day to Labor Day?
It takes it doesn't reduce the contact hours, but it takes from 185 to 170.
Oh, they are going to reduce the days. So.
Did you say that WASHA is it two years that they do their calendar? Is that what you said? Did you say that?
WASHA will have its calendar, but it rotates. So it does a flip because it starts a little bit later every year, and then you have to come back. So there's You'll have to talk to Ryan about what that looks like. But there's the one piece you look at is when does Wyoming High School Activity Association start practices and things of that nature.
That's a huge factor.
That's a huge factor that a lot of people don't think about because the calendar does move.
I never did.
And so you have to, there's a reset. And I want to say next year it's a reset year. I could be wrong, but I think it is.
Okay. Interesting.
So Charles, as Congress works towards this, and I think it's going to pass, we're not going to change the time anymore. We're going to spring forward this spring and that'll be it. There'll be no more time changes. Will that impact the schools in your opinion?
It's just change. I don't see that. It's just everybody's going to have to get used to we're not rolling forward or rolling back.
It'll be a little later time to pick the kids up, but they'll get home a little later. So.
Same time, just different sun.
Yes.
There'll be more kids picked up in the dark.
Yes.
There'll be what?
More kids picked up in the dark.
No, I think it's just the opposite. I think they'll be picked up in the daylight and they'll be brought home in the dark. You'll get up later and go to bed later. Is that the best way to say it?
Yeah. But just to kind of give a little history, just so you are with the calendar, it was my decision to go out 3 years after we got through the four-day survey that Dr. Hansen completed. We weren't there because we do have to start scheduling at least a minimum of 2 years out. So that first year when I got here, you know, we scrambled that spring because we didn't have a calendar out, but activities are scheduled out, a lot of things we're doing. Doesn't mean we can't flex it or tweak it as we need, but it really does help with that scheduling, even in the business aspect of things when we put our schedules together, our work schedules, all that kind of stuff. So long-term planning is a part of what we're doing. Doesn't mean we're set in stone, but at least we have a template of where we're going to be in the next 3 years. Unless legislature changes.
Unless the new law goes through and then we'll start from the bottom. Yep, still in reports.
Mr. Chair.
Please.
Mr. Anderson, I'm super excited about that training, the SDI training. That sounds really, really exciting to me for the world of SPED that I really understand or am continuing to learn about. But that, that's exciting. And, I mean, you've got a pretty good turnout. My question for you, and you can comment on that too, but my question is for you, can you give us the explanation? I like that pie chart, and I like that you explained everything. You kind of broke it down for us, what every disability is. But what's the difference between the primary and the secondary?
Thank you for asking that question.
Yeah, I know.
It's where they are, I guess, at most need as they do the assessment piece. What is the most critical area that's probably causing that student the most struggles?
Okay.
And the majority of the kids have one area that they're qualifying in. Some have a secondary area as well. So, you might have a kid that has a primary speech and language,
But then they're identifying something else.
With that, maybe they get some occupational therapy assistance.
Oh, okay. All right.
And you are welcome. All of you are welcome to come to the SDI training. It was pretty good. So the teachers have been talking that it was, it's really pretty good information. So
I would love to show up at some point. I'll chat with you
about that. All right. So, are we good, Mr. Chair?
I believe so.
Well, I'm going to break the news. I would strongly encourage any of you to watch the curriculum video if you have not. And Dr. Miller, I'll let you tell them about that video.
Right. Full transparency, that video wasn't me. It was an AI avatar.
Oh, no kidding.
So that wasn't me. It was... So enjoy. And my board report was ChatGPT to initially start it, and then I transformed it. So that whole report... was not necessarily me. It was generated GPT with the report, but the video was not me.
Oh, wow.
You didn't get me. I knew that wasn't you, but I didn't know what that was. I was unsure, and I think I watched it 3 times because hold on, and
it was
just
scripted.
But then I'd watch your eyes.
Staring,
and your eyes would go over, but then you'd look back at the camera. And then it looked like you were looking at the screen. But I know how you talk. That was, yeah, you got me, but
so
you
the app
me.
Is Hey Jen, so you can try it yourself.
Who is it?
Hey Jen. In fact, they have the CEO talking about this product that you can have your own AI avatar, even the Santa Claus
night.
Thing too, but let's not go there. But he said, watch these two videos and tell me which one is AI generated. And here I am trying to figure it out. And lo and behold, both of them were AI.
Well, and I just didn't think either because sometimes like Jake's room, I know that's not your room, Jake.
No, it is.
And so but that was your room. So I was trying to figure that out. I was like, what the heck?
So what they do is they have you record. I just talked about golf and chess and spring break. I talked for 2 minutes. And then I uploaded that video.
Good
and
job.
So they keep that same background with the bookshelf and everything, and then I typed in the script that I wanted, and so then they used that, I guess, that preliminary video to make my mouth move. Again, it's not perfect. There's some, you know, robotics in there, but, you know, if you don't really know me or that person, you can get away with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you just leave them wondering.
All right, that's chapter for the night.
Yeah, great. All the principals now going to do theirs this way.
Hey, now we got it easy. Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, our reports are easy now.
Okay. Last call. Anybody else? District admin reports. All right. Board level reports. Rec board.
We didn't meet last month. We don't meet in December. But tomorrow, we'll set the calendar for this year. And then by next meeting, I should know when the deadlines for grants are.
Yeah. Excellent. BOCs. I don't know that there's anything to report there yet.
I just got...
So Craig can...
Yeah, I found out that the meetings are the fourth Thursday, so it's the 23rd.
Okay.
That's when the meetings are virtual. So...
Who took Jan's spot?
You did.
Oh, Benito's
good. And we asked Craig to be our member to get him in contact with those folks. So we sort of changed that one a little bit. Bo Cheese.
Not that I'm aware of, Charles.
I'm not aware of anything either. So
haven't seen anything come across.
Other than we're hosting the next event here. So.
Right, huh? Okay, from the board. Anybody got anything they want to bring up and discuss?
So you asked us to write these questions to ask the principals. When is that going to happen?
Oh, I thought that was principal reports.
Oh, I thought we were going around and we had to ask each different principal.
No, I was just going to have you ask them during principal reports. I wasn't clear on that.
Well, God, here we got these
ready to run
questions. Yes,
They're still here. Fire away.
Yeah. See, and Maggie, I already answered yours because mine was, and I want you to look at that because we're talking about it. I was going to ask you, has AI affected students' learning or staff? But I got that answer tonight.
Yes.
By Amy Pearson and whatnot. They did use AI. And but how about kids?
I'm quite pleased with the feedback that they got, even when skeptical. I'm not sure that we've really
they're a little young, that's
into,
cool.
into the how students can use it in a way that helps them. At our level, yet.
And I know that question is probably better suited for maybe Gib or the higher
mm-hmm.
kids
the high
in higher
schools.
Grades.
Would be good, so.
We do have a representative, Brandy Sullivan, is our school representative mm-hmm. on that AI committee. Mm-hmm. And Julie Snyder does quite a bit of professional development and just her own interest in it will research a little bit, but as far as using it on
they're
a day-to-day
that,
basis,
yeah.
I don't know that we've really gone down that road quite yet.
So I did do my homework.
Excellent.
Because that's what you told us to do.
Yes, very good. Thank you.
And I know Marcia did, too.
Is there anybody else? If you got questions for principals, by all means. We get them all ahead of the net? All right.
Ops team next month?
Ops team next month. They enjoyed that. Other thing. You just got volunteered.
We'll do principals. I just got the look.
Anything else from the board? Other topics we need to discuss? I can't think of anything. Anybody else? Okay, reminder, February 7 and 8, the board training. We're going to be at Cloud Peak Elementary. And afternoon and the morning, this will be the culmination of our book study.
Absolutely. So let's go back to the beginning of February. So February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, we'll be in Cheyenne. We'll come back to a work session, and then we will kick off, or we'll end the week. So we'll end the week with the Covey training, which will be Friday evening and Saturday morning. Please make sure you reached out to Heidi for all those events, traveling to Cheyenne and for the study. And then also at this work session in February, parent liaison will be presenting at February, but also Mitch Kraft will be one of the main presenters for the work session that Wednesday. So Travis, I would ask you as a board if specifics, if it's going to be PLCs or it's evaluation system, but we are going to be doing some windshield time with Mitch next Monday for PD, and he kind of wanted to know some details. So maybe you and I can talk a little bit about that as the rest of the board kind of gives you some key points. But his training initially was about PLCs. Mm-hmm. And I know Dave and some others have asked kind of about some evaluation pieces, but he's getting ready to set his presentation for February with you guys. Okay?
If you guys just want to email back and text, we can pick the subject, but both of those are things we could certainly learn.
Or I can just create a document, and you guys just can throw things in, whatever you want.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's do that.
Okay. All right.
Now, the Friday one, was it initially a Zoom one, I thought?
The Covey training?
Yeah.
The Covey training is not on Zoom.
Yeah, I thought I read somewhere the first night was, but then I knew the second day was here. But.
The middle school, isn't it?
Yeah. It will be at Cloud Peak.
Cloud Peak, excuse me. Cloud.
But if there's something we can do, we could look at.
Yeah, I just did.
Yeah. Well, I'm like a
quick turnaround.
Yeah. Well, I just did work stuff. I get it.
Yep. But we can look at that because there might be some other stuff. Okay.
That's going to be a long one. It's 5:30 p.m. to 8:30
yes.
a.m.
Yeah.
See, the principal, he doesn't even give us a day off in the week.
I seen that the other day, too, and I thought the same thing. I was like, wow, that's a long one.
Mm-hmm. Bring your pillow.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to forewarn you, the Cheyenne trip is not short days either, so it will be a long week.
Yes, it will.
People have expressed that I get them up too early and get them to bed too late.
She said 8:30 a.m.
It's a lock-in.
Just overnight and stay. Okay, next work session, February 5. It's going to be a full one, so bring your snacks and come ready. It sounds like we've got a bit to cover. February 10th for the next board meeting. We're going to put together an agenda and look at that at the work session like usual. Public comment. Any public comment this evening? None. All right. I need a motion to go into executive session.
I make a motion to go into executive session per Wyoming Statute 16-4-405 for personnel and legal matters.
I'll second it.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Okay.
This audio was brought to you by Cotant Family Dentistry in Buffalo. This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.